Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle, sponsored by DraftKings.co.uk, your home of one-day fantasy football. We are in association with NFL Shop Europe. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, back from 2 weeks in the sunshine, ready for some NFL football so I can talk to my old pal, Jeff Rimebo. Jeff, how are you?
I'm doing outstanding, Neil. It's good to have you back. It's been a long 2 weeks without you.
It's been a. I've had a bit of NFL decompression, actually, but I'm ready now. The season is, 2 weeks from Thursday night. We'll have the opening game, the Carolina Panthers against the defending Super Bowl champion Denver Broncos. And Jeff, we have a situation where we could see a Super Bowl champion open the following season with a quarterback who's never thrown an NFL pass. Trevor Siemian started last week against San Francisco. He did throw a costly interception, but he's going to start again this weekend against the LA Rams. So Mark Sanchez said he feels like he squandered a chance. Paxton Lynch may have outplayed both of them, but this is remarkable, Jeff. I mean, we've talked all off-season about the Broncos quarterback situation, but we're a little over 2 weeks from the start of the regular season, and the Super Bowl champions do not know who is going to be under center on opening night.
You know what? I don't think there's a sense of panic in Denver. I know some coaches on that staff very well, and, you know, their approach to this thing, you know, is that their franchise guy, their, quote, franchise quarterback is Von Miller. That's where the money went in the offseason. They feel like they're good enough on defense that they'll be in every game, that you know, their formula for winning is certainly going to be a little different than, say, a team like New England, which is so quarterback dependent. They just need the quarterback to manage the game and not screw it up, and they've got enough weapons around them. They can run the ball well enough. Defenders and those guys on the outside will make enough plays, and then defensively, you know, they really believe that they're, you know, good enough, and I think they proved that down the stretch last fall and all the way to the run to the Super Bowl, that, you know, when they're healthy, they are good enough on defense to be in every game.
So if that's their formula, Jeff, then, you know, I would be nervous going with Mark Sanchez. That would give me, in my mind, the inside track to Trevor Siemian, because Sanchez has always been a turnover machine.
I agree with you, and I think that's one of the things that is, you know, could be actually gone on record as saying he's going to make his decision next week after this third preseason game, which is typical because the third preseason game, you know, is the most important preseason game. As you know, the fourth one is usually played by guys that are going to get cut or, you know, lower end of the roster guys. So this one is the key one. And if Siemian plays well, I think he'll get the nod because he's been in the program for a year and you know, they know him better. Lynch has made strides over the course of camp. And maybe of the three, quote, you know, premier quarterbacks in the draft last year, he may have had the best preseason of any of those guys.
We're going to go through the preseason. We're kind of right in the middle of it now, as Jeff talks about. This week is the third preseason game, third round of preseason games, and this is the ones that we'll see the starters for the most, if at all, Jeff, because there seems to be a growing trend to keep out those starters. Teams are trying to avoid the Jordy Nelson scenario of a year ago. So we know that, you know, Big Ben has been sat down by the Steelers. Antonio Brown has not seen action. We won't see Adrian Peterson. We never do in the preseason. But obviously there are going to be jobs to be won and lost. So we thought we'd maybe just go through, no real structure to this, Jeff, this week. We'll just talk about things that have kind of caught our eye around the preseason so far. I've been catching up over the last couple of days, and one of the things that struck me is that the Rams returning to LA is going to be a box office success this year, Jeff. What was it, 100,000 people for their first game?
Well, you know what? LA, though, that market is so fickle. And, you know, I think it's important that the Rams play well, not just play in LA. They've got to play well in LA. And I think having Hard Knocks there has helped the team. I think it's an interesting phenomenon when all those cameras are rolling all the time. And, you know, it was interesting. I was talking to Paul Boudreaux, the offensive line coach with the Rams, and he was one of my college coaches. And his son was on the Rams staff last year and now is coaching in Winnipeg. And it was interesting. I was talking to him before our game. And the first episode, one of the first things that happened at training camp it was Coach Fisher had to cut a rookie who had a girl in his room, because Fish has very few rules, be on time and no visitors in the dorm during training camp. Mm. And doggone it, it's the first day he doesn't have catch a young kid, an undrafted free agent, with a woman in his room, and you know, cut him right on the show. So that Hard Knocks thing is I think an interesting thing for coaches and teams to juggle, because it does allow the fans an inside look, but it can be a distraction too. And there are plenty of distractions in LA, you know, without Hard Knocks.
Yeah, there certainly are. Jeff, Tavon Austin was injured in that first episode of Hard Knocks. If you look in the background, you'll see yours truly. I'm there watching on. He got hurt right in front of me. I thought at the time that he'd had a hamstring injury, but it was just a case of him cramping up. But there's my little claim to fame, being on the first episode of Hard Knocks. And I would say as well, when I was out there in LA, I know we didn't really get to talk about the back end of my training camp trip because we had technical issues on our last podcast together. But Jeff, this is clearly Case Keenum's team right now for me. The way he acts, the way he carries himself. The Rams gave up a lot to get Jared Goff. But Case Keenum carries himself like he's the leader of this team, like he is the starting quarterback of the LA Rams.
Yeah, I think Jeff made that clear, even prior to training camp, saying that it was Case's team. I think when you look at that football team, I've watched him play in the preseason, and it's interesting, Greg Williams, the defense coordinator, he's got him playing, you know, more defense than you typically see in preseason. I think they're going to come out, you know, and use the formula that won for Fisher in Tennessee. Run the football, manage the game at the quarterback position, play great defense. You know, they're going to blitz from every place and, you know, pound the rock. And I think it's interesting, you know, there's a kind of a little bit of a trend right now in the National Football League going back to that a little bit, kind of going back to the roots and run the ball. And when you look at Tennessee, I know that's what they're trying to do. I watch their preseason games. And they're trying to lighten the load for Mariota and pound the rock with Henry. So it's going to be an interesting season for a number of teams.
Jeff, one of the things when we recorded our last podcast I talked about was the way that veterans have to fight against younger players. We've talked about this in the past. It's very different for some players. Some are fighting for jobs. Others are just trying to fine-tune their skills. And finding that balance as a coach is a difficult one. I was in Washington or in Virginia and watching the Redskins practice, and veteran tight end Logan Paulson was blocking a defensive end, a young undrafted guy, and Paulson was kind of having his way with this young rookie. And the rookie all of a sudden just picked up Logan Paulson and was almost trying to body slam him to the ground. Now, Paulson managed to fight that off, and then he was mad. He was steaming mad, and he went after this rookie. And Jay Gruden had to get in and break them up. And I thought about that this week because your old friend Michael Bennett has been kicked out of another practice with the Seattle Seahawks, and he took exception to offensive lineman Bradley Sowell, and those two got into a fight. And Bennett actually said there's a code that has to be followed on the field. This is always a tricky balancing act, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And it's interesting with Michael's situation because Michael actually wasn't even involved in the play. But he was sticking up for a defensive lineman who got body slammed, and he jumped in, and then he and Sowell went after one another, and you know, he felt it was his responsibility as kind of the elder statesman of the defensive lineman to step in and draw the line in the sand. It's really a difficult balance, Neil, because you've been to training camp. You know the monotony of it. You know how hard it is. You know that everybody's fighting for jobs. It's a really, really high-pressure situation, high-pressure time. Coaches are constantly on you, pushing you to do more, work harder. And, it sometimes boils over in frustration. And like you said, there's situations that you get this from Washington where a young player, you know, they go out there every day knowing that their existence is a day-to-day thing. And you know, they get dominated and they get frustrated and then they lash out and away you go, now you got problems. It was interesting. You know, Cleveland's had the same situations in their training camp where, you know, they've addressed the fighting issue. Buffalo's had problems with it, and as a coach, you want to see them be competitive and you want to see them, you know, get after one another. But you worry like crazy that those things turn into a guy takes a punch at a guy and then hits him and hits his helmet and breaks his hand, and now you've lost a player that, you know, that you depend on. So you want to see him compete, but you know you got to take it right there to the you know, lunatic fringe, I guess, and then not step over.
Mm. You talked about the Cleveland Browns there, Jeff. They're one of the teams that I listed in things that caught my eye, and in particular Terrell Pryor, because obviously a lot is going to be made of Robert Griffin III and how he develops this preseason and takes that starting job with the Browns at quarterback. But let's talk about Terrell Pryor, Jeff, because he had a 50-yard touchdown pass last week, or a catch last week, in which he beat Desmond Trufant, who's a starting caliber cornerback for the Atlanta Falcons. So Terrell Pryor is attempting to switch from quarterback to wide receiver. And when we see players make that kind of switch, we almost automatically assume, well, it's they're in the last chance saloon and they're on their way to failing and out of the NFL. But Terrell Pryor could actually make an impact for the Browns based on his preseason form. What do you think of it, and how hard is it to change positions in the NFL?
Well, I'm going to tell you something. That kid, if you know that kid's history, you know, he was the most highly recruited high school football player in the country when he went to Ohio State. And you know, he didn't do anything at Ohio State to make people think he wasn't that talented guy. He has always been an incredibly talented athlete. He suffered a little bit, I think, from playing in a system at Ohio State that didn't allow him to really develop as a quarterback. Mm-hmm. He's got great athletic ability. There's no question about his athleticism. Now, making the transition from quarterback to receiver is certainly, I think, easier than making the transition from, let's say, quarterback to defensive back, because obviously you've been in the meetings, you understand the concepts, you understand coverage better, all those other things. You know, it's interesting when you look at the game and you look at the Browns in particular. This is a team that doesn't have much depth at receiver. Doesn't have, you know, you look at their list of receivers and you say, hey, can he crack this lineup? Well, you just base it on that kid's athletic ability, and I agree with you. I think he can be a guy that can impact them, you know, just on his raw physical skills. You know, there's a guy I watched the other day in preseason, a backup quarterback for Carolina, a guy named Joe Webb,
yep,
who is a lot that same guy. I mean, Joe played at University of Alabama, Birmingham. Was a great athlete at quarterback, not a quarterback, you know, not in the classic NFL mold, but he's been around the NFL. He's now 7 years in the NFL just because he's such a great athlete. And he's a good enough athlete that Carolina carries him as a third quarterback, and he plays on the special team. So he's finding a way to use his athleticism to stick around, and I think that's what's happening with Terrell Pryor.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing about Joe Webb. He was, you know, he had a brief spell as the, you know, stand-in emergency quarterback for the Vikings, but, you know, there's a quarterback who's going down covering kicks, and he's made a career out of it. Jeff, I want to talk about Dak Prescott, because we've got a couple of questions in the mailbag about him. He's been very impressive for the Dallas Cowboys. Now, we've got to, again, it's preseason. Everything's got to be kind of put into context, but, you know, the Dallas Cowboys have possibly found a decent backup for Tony Romo, and who knows, maybe they found a starter for the future sometime down the road. What have you thought of Dak Prescott when you've seen him in action?
Well, I'm happy for the kid, first of all, because, again, you know, this is a kid that when I was at SMU, I recruited the state of Louisiana, and Dak's from Louisiana. He's from up in northern Louisiana, and he's from a little tiny town. He was a really under-recruited kid in high school. Actually, the only SEC offer he had was Mississippi State. He goes there, has a great career at Mississippi State, then, you know, gets in a little bit of a thing off the field, you know, during the offseason before his rookie year. I think the kid is a quality kid. Now, I'm gonna just kind of warn Cowboy Nation, pump the brakes on this one a little bit, because you got to understand, and I'm not diminishing what he's done, because he has looked very good in those first two preseason games, but you don't even, as a coordinator on defense, you're not even game planning, per se, those first games. What'll be interesting to me will be now in the third game, when people really start to hone in on what they want to do and actually will actually game plan a little bit for the third. If he can do it again, if he can do it through the first three, then I'm going to say this guy's, you know, the real deal. And you know, there was an awful lot of talk about him at the draft and in the run up to the draft, because he does have a good enough arm, and he has proven that he can win. When you can take a team like Mississippi State is not a destination school by any means in the SEC. When you can take a team like Mississippi State to bowl games like he did, then you got to have some ability, and you got to. People talk all the time about his leadership skills, which I think are critical. That it factor that it's hard to evaluate when you're just looking at the guy's height, weight, and throwing ability.
So, Jeff, when we look at quarterbacks, and we could look at this when we're evaluating Jared Goff as well. I watched his game against Kansas City, and there were ups and downs for sure. You know, a couple of fumbles, some passes that were off the mark. When we're assessing these quarterbacks in the preseason, are they seeing what kind of percentage of the defense and coverage and blitzes are they? Are they seeing a quarter of a real NFL defense? Are they seeing 50%? I mean, in your experience, are we barely scratching the surface of an NFL defense in terms of complexity of coverage and blitzes that you would see if it was week one in the regular season?
Yeah, I think there's, in general, I'm going to just give you in general terms. I know certainly when I was in Kansas City, Greg Robinson, the first reopened with the Redskins, and he didn't do any game plan stuff. That he just basically ran what we had run in practice during the week leading up to the game. And then as we played the Bears in the second preseason game, then you started to see a little bit of game planning going on where, again, you actually had a better feel. The first preseason game, it's the good players play so little. It's more vanilla. Then it becomes a little bit more involved. The second one, the third one, you'll go in this week, and I think this is the week you really want to get a feel for your team. Watch this preseason game, the third one, and then you'll actually start the game plan, and you'll start to throw some more blitzes, more coverage at people. But, like I said, I was watching the Rams the other day, and I'm watching Greg Robinson, and he's bringing them from everywhere. I think he brought one from the third row of the bleachers one time. I mean, he's got guys blitzing up from every angle. And that's just a different philosophy. Typically in preseason games, you're not going to see that much, exotic defense.
No, that's just Greg Robinson for you. I was talking to Colts tight end Dwayne Allen over the summer, Jeff, and he said that when it comes to preseason games, he barely even looks at who he's playing or even worries about who's going to be lining up on him from play to play. It's all about preparing himself for that regular season. So Dak Prescott has made a good start with the Dallas Cowboys. Somebody who hasn't made a good start, Jeff, is this kicker for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So Roberto Aguayo, we know they gave up a lot to go and get him. It was already an eyebrow-raising move to pick him so high in the draft. He missed a PAT a couple of weeks ago, and then last week against Jacksonville, he missed field goals from 32 and 49 yards. He now says that he's starting to feel the pressure, and he's going to be working with a mental coach. He hasn't even reached week one yet, Jeff, and he's reached for the mental coach. Kickers.
I think those kickers have mental coaches on speed dial.
He's going to feel the pressure, though, Jeff, isn't he? Because so much got given up.
You're going to feel the pressure when the head coach comes out publicly and says he's got to make those. I mean, it's interesting. Dirk Cutter was not shy at all about, putting the kid right on the spotlight and saying, hey, we gave up an awful lot to get this kid, and he's come in here and he's got to make those kicks. This is the National Football League, and that's life in the game. He's not the first young kicker to come in struggle under the pressure and the spotlight of the National Football League. Those posts, let me just say this, those posts get really thin, and I mean really narrow, when you got to go out there and you got to hit one through under pressure. And, I'll tell you this story. Kansas City, we bring in Lawrence Tynes to replace Todd Peterson because Todd's old. He's had a great career, but he just didn't have the length in his leg anymore. We go through the preseason, and they basically gave Tynesy the job. They just handed him the job. And we went out, and he missed an extra point in the Redskin game, and then came back and got a PAT blocked in the Bears game and missed another one, and that was the end of it. They just said, we're not going to go with a guy that's that inconsistent. Even though Todd wasn't he couldn't hit the ball, couldn't hit it past 40 very much anymore and was short on his kickoffs. They just have a – the rookies, I'm telling you, right, I know I say this all the time, but I'm going to tell you, rookies get you beat. That's just the way it is.
So rookies and rookie kickers, what a combination Bucks have got to deal with. But Jeff, another as another kicker I noted with interest last week, watching the bits of the Minnesota and Seattle game, it could have been a potential game-winning kick in the fourth quarter for Blair Walsh against Seattle, fresh from last year's playoff debacle in that freezing cold. And he missed it, Jeff. He missed a 47-yarder, which this is not a chip shot, of course. But, it's just another little thing where it makes you sit up and say, Blair Walsh has got some demons that he's going to have to exercise at some point this season. And you hope you get it all out of your system now in the preseason. But that was an interesting one for me. Jeff, one other one. I did write down here, no star names gone down. Jordy Nelson type thing. But actually, we're starting to see a few now. With Vontae Davis is going to miss the first month of the season with high ankle ligament damage for the Colts. He's a Pro Bowler the last couple of years. And Sebastian Vollmer, a key member of that offensive line in New England. That's going to be a big one, isn't it, Jeff?
I think that's a huge one because he has been, and Sebastian is a guy that kind of flies under the radar a little bit, in terms of name recognition. But he has been such a fixture at right tackle for them. And his flexibility, when Solder got hurt last year, his ability to go over and play left tackle, he's a rock-solid offensive lineman. And those are hard to come by. Mm. And to lose him and his veteran presence at what looks like maybe the whole season in New England, that is they're talking about cannon playing for him. And I tell you what, it's a big drop-off. From Sebastian Vollmer to Cannon. There's no question about that.
And Jeff, that's interesting because I straight away I thought this is big because this is an offensive line that already had Tom Brady hit however many times that was in that AFC Championship game at Denver. It was an offensive line that was a problem area anyway to a degree. And here's your drop-off to Marcus Cannon. Then I'm reading stories coming out in New England telling me that Marcus Cannon has been having a strong training camp and that he is probably going to, or could be, an upgrade. But then I thought, well, this is training camp, Jeff. This is, you've got to have that pedigree at some point. And Vollmer has that proven regular season pedigree that Cannon at this stage just doesn't have. So there's bound to be some uncertainty.
Yeah, I think a lot of that's hype, to be real honest with you. Again, Marcus Cannon's a good athlete. He may be, if you want to just say on in terms of feet, flexibility and some of the measurables, if you will, for offensive linemen, he may be an upgrade to Vollmer. Let me tell you something. When you've been there, done that, and especially at tackle, when you've been there, done that, like Sebastian Vollmer has, and been so solid for all his years in New England, and I think if you ask Tom Brady, you might get a little different opinion than, that Cannon's going to be an upgrade to Vollmer.
Chuck Pagano said his cornerback situation is scary with Vontae Davis now down. They've got four injured. They've signed Antonio Cromartie. Well, what stage are we at with Cromartie, Jeff? I mean, he still gets his interceptions, but I think he gives up his share of big plays as well, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. And, that is obviously a concern. When you lose a player like, Davis, you're talking about a guy that, has eight interceptions in the last few years and really has been a cornerstone. And, I hate to use that term, shutdown corner, because I think it's way overused, but he's at least been their rock-solid guy. He's their matchup guy. He's big. He's strong. He's the guy that can go handle those big receivers. And, Cromartie, like you say, will make plays for you, but he's going to give up some plays, too. That's one of the reasons he was available. So I think that, Pagano's right to say that it's a scary situation. You got to have not just one corner. We talk about this all the time. In today's NFL, you better have three corners. And you look at one of the reasons why Denver was so good last year was their ability to play three corners against the three wide receiver teams and not miss a beat. They didn't have to drop a safety down. They could bring in a corner and match up with any three receivers in the game.
Davis gives you that confidence as well, Jeff. I mean, he's long and he's strong. He likes playing in press man coverage, but what he gives you as well is that kind of arrogance that you want from the position. He told me over the summer, he absolutely sees himself as one of those elite handful of NFL cornerbacks. And he said, every week, I'm going to be on the opposing team's number one. Well, now that's gone until the end of October.
And that's tough, and that's a tough thing to replace. That swagger, if you will, that kind of attitude, that's what all the great... I've never met a great corner who didn't have that, you know, confidence in himself. Now, some express it in different ways, and some are more outlandish in how they express it, but I mean, you go through all of them, and they all have that ability because they do play on an island. They do play in a situation where you're out there and you're out there, you know, it's between you and the guy you're playing against and everybody, and God, the Dallas Texans sees you. So you fail, you're going to fail in the spotlight, and you better have the mental toughness to deal with that and come back and recognize that you got to play again. That's what the great ones have, and he has that in spades.
Josh Norman certainly has that. Jeff, when I interviewed him at the Redskins camp, he was my favorite interview of my whole trip. He was funny, he was open, he was insightful, but he was brash and cocky, and I could imagine him being a massive wind-up merchant. I could imagine him trying to get under the skin of every NFL wide receiver, but he was a lot of fun, and people can look out for that interview.
Right. Let me just say this. He's in the right division if he's looking for guys to get underneath the skin off, because, you know, Dez ain't going to back away from him, and, you know, Odell Beckham Jr. is right around the corner, and I mean, he's got guys in that division that will certainly challenge him, and you know, whether it's physically challenge him or you know, challenge him with the trash talk, there's going to be some great matchups. I think it's interesting. You know, I wanted to get your take on that. You know, I think he's kind of been unmuzzled a little bit in Washington. I think they may have kept him under wraps a little bit in Carolina. But now, boy, it seems like his personality has really come out in his time with the Redskins.
Yes, he has, Jeff. And there's a little bit of an edge to him, but I think it's in a nice way. I came away so impressed by him. I thought he was a really decent guy. You know, he said, I'm gonna pick at the scabs of a wide receiver. And if I find something that upsets you, I'm going to pick at it until it bleeds. That's just the way he is. That's the way he plays. He sees the talking as a big part of the game. But he does it with a little bit of humor. I think he knows he's a wind-up merchant. I think he knows that he's trying to do that to receivers. You know, and I actually found him quite funny. I thought it was quite amusing to hear him talk that way. And he is. You're right. You're absolutely right. He is. He has been given, I think he's been given more license to be himself, and he's kind of relishing it.
I tell you what, it'll be interesting to see, like you say. I mean, if you're a wind-up merchant, man, oh man, are those battles with the Cowboys. They're going to take on a new, luster, I think. Go back to those old days when the, you know, the Skins and the Cowboys were such an intense rivalry game, and I think that's brewing again in the NFC. It's interesting, Neil, with that kid. Now think about him. You know, how big a step is it when you're drafted in the bottom of the draft and you're from Coastal Carolina?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you're out there playing the best receivers. If you don't have confidence, if you don't have a little bit of arrogance about yourself, you're going to fold under that spotlight. And that's what's, I think, that edge, that mental edge that he talks about, that you know, psychological battle, he relishes that. I think that's one of the reasons why he's playing in the NFL.
Yeah, I think he probably used that before he even tested his, you know, that was his chance to level the playing field, if you like, Jeff, to come out and be that kind of person right from the start. He had a confidence, he had a brashness, he was going to be in your face and he wasn't going to back down, and then, you know, he'll worry about all the physical skills as he develops as a player. But I think that probably allowed him an easier transition into the NFL, and he's not been without problems. He was benched in Carolina, he had a fight with Cam Newton last year in around this time in training camp. You know, so he's had some negative headlines, and you know, I'm not going to say he's a choir boy. He's not a choir boy by any stretch of the imagination. But I just, I don't know. I didn't find he had a nasty edge to him. I found him all very quite amusing.
Well, it'll be fun to watch how it unfolds. And like I said, I think, you know, there's going to be an awful lot of attention paid to how he matches up with those elite receivers that he's going to face in that division. And certainly, you're playing in a much high profile, you know, environment when you're playing with the Redskins in the nation's capital than you are when you're playing in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Yeah, absolutely. Jeff, before we get on to a couple of your thoughts from the preseason, if there's anything else you've seen, obviously I mentioned at the top, we're now in association with NFL Shop Europe, and they've got a special deal on for all you great listeners for this week. For 1 week only, NFL Shop Europe are going to give you 15% off the entire store for 1 week. If you type in this URL, go to europe.nflshop.com/ITH for Inside the Huddle. So a great deal there. Jeff, our fans can be all decked out in the merchandise ready for the new season.
Well, they better get them on because it's just around the corner and you don't want to be caught without your team colors on when it's game day. And I know I'll have my black and silver. I'll be loaded with my Raiders gear. 15%, I might buy two shirts.
I might get a shirt for every NFL man crush I have while it's 15%. So I'll get the Andrew Luck jersey, you know, the Aaron Rodgers. There might be a few of them.
I got to ask you a question. As a definite Dolphin apologist, right? And even though you're a typical Dolphin fan, you think the sky is falling around you every time I talk to you about your fans. Mm-hmm. What's your take on your quarterback calling out your tight end the other day? I mean, I thought that was interesting. Tannehill saying that Cameron Jordan has to pick up his game. I thought that was an interesting. Maybe a step for him as a quarterback in terms of leadership, team leadership.
Well, that's the thing that maybe there's always been leveled against Tannehill, Jeff, is that he doesn't take command. He doesn't have that that kind of presence, you know. And I've seen that presence you talk about is, you know, it's just that it factor that people want your quarterback to have. And some quarterbacks that you wouldn't expect to have it. So Case Keenum operates that way. You know, I think Blake Bortles has become a true franchise quarterback. Andy Dalton is clearly in command of the entire Cincinnati Bengals team when he's on the field. And I would say, as much as I, you know, I like Ryan as well, as off the field he's a great guy, but you know, maybe that's the part that has been missing from his game. I think he can make all the throws. I think he's mobile. He can be that kind of quarterback that can pick up yards for you on the ground, but he has not had that it factor, and that it factor can lead to creating big plays on third down. It can create touchdowns in the red zone, and it can lead to fourth quarter wins. Those are the kind of things that Brett Favre was doing week in and week out, and you know, Tannehill has not had any of that. So I didn't mind it, to be honest. I mean, look, the Miami Dolphins haven't exactly won a lot in recent years, Jeff. They could all be called out, so they can all start calling each other out every week as far as I'm concerned.
Hey, I got to tell you a story. I'm talking to a friend of mine with the Bears, right? The Bears were in New England last week. They had 3 days of work together with the Patriots and then had a preseason game. So I was talking to him yesterday, and you know, you're talking about that very thing, that it factor, that leadership, that, you know, that kind of toughness that you know, all the great ones had. Peyton had it. You know, they'd all just express it in their own way, but he was saying that they were in a 2-minute drill, and they had a scenario where, you know, they were trying to get the ball down. The Patriots were trying to get the ball down against the Bears in this workout that they were doing, and kick a field goal at the end of the game. So Brady throws a seam pass with about 15 seconds left to go on the clock, and a tight end, young tight end, dropped it. And he said there are 5,000 people that, you know, put temporary bleachers up, like most teams do now, at mm-hmm. training camp practices. There's 5,000 people there, and the kid drops the ball. And then all of a sudden, Brady just tore a strip off of him. I mean, you know, I can't repeat the words. I can't repeat the words on the radio. But that's, you know, that's the kind of thing that, you know, you need that presence, that quarterback. You need that demanding, you know, leadership ability. And You know, you don't see that in Tom Brady when you hear him being interviewed, but boy, you see it on the practice field and you see it on the sideline in games. That, you know, he's demanding, really demanding of the guys around him.
Some guys have to grow into that, Jeff, don't they? Some have it naturally. I mean, I think Brett Favre was giving Jerry Glanville headaches in Atlanta the minute he walked into the NFL, but he had a swagger about him and he had a presence in the locker room. I'd say I sat down with Jared Goff. He doesn't have that presence at the moment, Jeff. He doesn't, for me, have, you know, sometimes you can get a sense of it just from sitting across somebody and chatting to them for 10 minutes. There's one right there who the Rams have given up a lot for who doesn't have that it factor at the moment. So, but again, he's young. He's just come into the NFL. He's trying to learn everything. Maybe sitting down and doing an interview with somebody from the UK, you know, is not where he's going to show that it factor. But sometimes you can tell straight away.
Well, I think you know, to be fair to Jared Goff, I'm not sure when Tom Brady came out of Michigan as a sixth round draft choice,
right,
that, you know, he had that at that time. Mm-hmm. But there's a certain amount of credibility, street cred, that you have to get with your teammates at that position, and in order to, you know, have that ability to lead. And the sooner that a young guy gets it, you know, in terms of understands how important it is, how you carry yourself, how you lead in the huddle, you know, how you prepare, how you practice. You know, I know one of our listeners had a question about, you know, Geno, and you know, you've been around him on the practice. That's a guy who has all the physical ability, Geno Smith, and just, but doesn't have the presence, doesn't have the work habits, doesn't have. I mean, how are you as a young receiver, or a young tight end, or a young whatever player, and you're out there on the practice field, and the quarterback's the first guy out there and the last guy off, and you're dropping balls. It ain't going to be that way. And, you know, when you look at I was talking to a guy the other day who was doing some work for the Seahawks back in the Steve Largent days, and he talked about he was amazed because he went to training camp, and he didn't really know football. He was doing some other work for the Seahawks. So he watched practice just as an observer. And the thing that shocked him was that after practice, long after practice, half an hour after practice, Jim Zorn and Steve Largent were out there just going out routes, just out route after out route after out route, trying to perfect their time. That's what the great ones do. And it's the guys who, you know, don't have that kind of work ethic, don't have that kind of attention to detail. Those are the guys that, no matter how talented they are, never can actualize at the level that they need to.
No, I was in Indianapolis, Jeff, and Andrew Luck, who's now the highest paid player in the NFL, was one of the first on the practice field. When I was in New York the previous summer, Geno Smith was second to last on the practice field. They are snapshots. They are small examples, but it makes you sit up and wonder about the sort of commitment of each of them. We're going to get into the mailbag, Jeff, in just a couple of seconds after this short message.
NFL Game Pass. Over 200 games, plus NFL Red Zone and NFL Network. Live or on demand on all of your devices.
What a catch for a touchdown!
Go to NFL.com/Game Pass to start your free trial today.
All right, Jeff, the first question comes from, let's have a look. We've done Mark Sugar talk. Mark Sugar talked about Dak Prescott, and we've kind of covered Dak Prescott. Let's go for this one. Brian Friel wants to know, does Jeff believe in mermaids? Did you see this story with William Hayes? This is the craziness going on in LA right now. He got visited by a mermaid at practice.
Do I believe in them? Absolutely, I believe in them. I've seen two of them in my life.
I was going to ask you because you spend a lot of time on the water, Jeff. You spend a lot of time, you know, surfing and paddleboarding. So I thought you might have seen them, because my youngest daughter, Poppy, she's convinced that mermaids are real. So I want you, William Hayes has kind of given me hope, but I want you to confirm it right now.
I can confirm with validity the fact that they do exist. I've had two fleeting encounters, and I will say fleeting encounters with mermaids. So tell Poppy, just believe, girl, just believe.
All right. Good stuff, Jeff. We might get you randomly tested after this, but we'll move on. Robin Armstrong asked, after seven...
I swear it's coffee, Neil. It's coffee. It's there's nothing more in it.
No, that's it. It's all coffee. Robin Armstrong says, 17 years of great preseasons have ended in playoff failure. Could a disastrous one for the Buffalo Bills get them to the playoffs this year? What the heck is going on in Buffalo, Jeff? Marcel Darius is heading for rehab. Carlos Williams has been cut.
I'd say it's interesting. I watched them play the other day, and it doesn't look good right now. I mean, it doesn't look good right now. Here's a guy, like, you take a guy like Darius, and these are the guys that frustrate the hell out of you when you're coaching, because here's a guy with all kinds of ability, and he can't quite seem to understand that, you know, the responsibility that you have to your teammates and to the organization that pays you as much as they pay you. I mean, last year he gets in trouble for drag race. I mean, how stupid is that? In Buffalo, and now, you know, we got a suspension, and, you know, all that stuff does is just brings more, just swirls more, you know, negative energy around your football team. And, you know, again, you know, we talk about it all the time. This is the hardest thing to do, in my opinion, in pro football, is to find, not you can find good players, there's plenty of good players, but find good players that can understand what it means to be a good teammate, understand what it means to be a pro, understand what it means to, you know, to have a responsibility to the other 53 guys in the locker room, because really those are selfish acts. Ultimately, they're selfish acts, because there's these guys that are getting suspended for whether it's PEDs or for recreational drugs or whatever, you know, off-season stuff, off-field stuff. It's all selfish acts, and it takes away from the football team. And, you know, you got 52 other guys in the locker room busting their ass trying to win a Super Bowl. And you know, in this case, you know, Rex Ryan, he's on the hot seat. I mean, Rob Ryan, they're my buddies, and I'm watching them, you know, dealing with this kind of crap. And that's what really frustrates you as a football coach.
Jeff, I'm learning about the perils of writing a preseason magazine in May, because Touchdown Magazine features breakout players to watch in 2016, and my breakout player for the Buffalo Bills was Carlos Williams. He's now been cut. My breakout player to watch for the Tennessee Titans was Doriel Green Beckham, who's now been traded to the Eagles. I mean, a lot can happen in a few months in pro football.
I'll tell you what, there is no security in this business. And, you know, we talk to the players all the time about it. Say, hey, listen, you know, sitting in the meeting room, look at the chair in front of you, and whose name is on the back of that chair? And it's nobody's name. And that's the same thing on my chair and your chair and every chair in the room. Somebody else will be sitting in that chair when we're out of it, and you better understand that what keeps you in that chair is your ability to prepare, your ability to play, your performance, and it's a performance-based industry. And if they think that somebody else can do it better and cheaper than you can, that's their right as an organization to do that. Or in the case of, you know, Green Beckham, if they feel like, you know, they can trade you and get something else that they need worse, then they're going to do that. And that's just life in the business.
Jeff, I'm going to disagree with you there, because actually in the NFL UK office, my name is on the back of my chair, because every time I go out of the office, somebody steals my chair, and I'm quite particular. I'm a bit sort of grumpy old man, get off my lawn type anyway. They steal my chair. So I've now put a big sticker on the back with my name on it. So I disagree. You can have your name on the back of your chair in the NFL.
That's only those, you know, guys that have those great contracts like you got. Guys that were high draft choices like you are. Guys that were, you know, a little bit pampered, a little bit, you know. Hey, I understand. I understand. There's a pecking order, right? Like, I don't even get a chair when I come back there.
That's true. That is true. You have to stand up a lot. Let's take this question from Vikings UK. They said, what are our thoughts on the Vikings handling of Teddy's injury, in quote marks? Must coaches always tell the media everything? So Teddy Bridgewater was sat down for last week's game against the Seattle Seahawks. Mike Zimmer would give nothing to the media about why he did this, whether there was an injury or anything. He just basically kept repeating, it was my decision. How many times are we going to go over this? This was my decision. Jeff, I listened to the press conference clips. and I was frustrated. I like Mike Zimmer a lot. I like a lot about the Vikings. They've got great PR staff who always help out the media. So there's a lot to like about this Minnesota Vikings team. But I've said this before. I think when you are in a press conference, you are talking to the people that pay your bills. You're talking to the fans. And it wasn't somebody from the Minneapolis Star Tribune just being nosy. Really, you could say this is a fan asking that question. And I didn't like the fact that it was just straight batted away. And it was almost like, well, it's none of your business. It's none of the fans' business. It's just my decision. That's just my take on it.
You know what? I got mixed feelings on this one. And I'm going to tell you, you talk about guys that say nothing, and you can start in New England, right?
Yep.
You're going to get nothing out of them. And that's just the way they run their organization. Them, you know, feels like he doesn't need to speak about it. And I think that's, to be honest with you, I think that's his prerogative as the head coach. However, I also have enough of the fan in me and enough of the media guy in me that believe that, you know, you need to keep the, you know, the fans. It's your responsibility to give information to the fans. Now, if it in some way can put your team at risk or something that you're doing at risk strategically or whatever, then I understand, you know, keeping it close to the vest.
Yeah.
So, like I said, I have mixed feelings. What's interesting to me, too, is, you know, we talk on this very same subject. You know, Christian Hackenberg hasn't taken a snap yet in New York, and there's a lot of speculation about why. And Todd Bowles has not really come out and given any information about why a guy that you drafted, and obviously, they're not happy with Geno. Why in the world has he not even had a snap in the preseason yet? You know, those are the kind of questions that, you know, I think I agree with you that you have a responsibility to the fans and to the league and to, you know, like you say, the people that pay your salary to be forthright.
Yeah, sometimes it's a sort of secret trying to be kept by the coaches. Bill Belichick, who you mentioned there, he basically just said it was a coach's decision to not play Tom Brady last week, and then it emerges that Brady cuts his throwing hand on a pair of scissors. But Belichick didn't front up and say that right at the beginning. It was just trying to keep this information from the media sometimes. Jeff, we are out of time. I've just got one.
You know what?
Sorry, go on. Go for it.
You know what? I'll tell you what. It's interesting. There's the relationship that a lot of coaches have with the media is it's almost contentious. It's almost like, you know, they feel like the media is the enemy. And I have been in rooms. I will tell you this. I've been in rooms, staff rooms and team meeting rooms where the head coach gets up and addresses the entire team and says, they are not your friend. You know, do not speak to them. Do not understand. You know, I mean, there's a general sense of paranoia, I think, amongst a lot of coaches about speaking with the media. That's why, to me, Arians, you know, Rex Ryan, those kinds of guys, I find them, Pete Carroll, I find them incredibly refreshing because they don't speak in cliches. They don't, you know, withhold. I mean, they're not going to tell you everything that you know, nor should they, but they're going to be honest and they're going to be accessible. And those are the things I think that, you know, all head coaches should be.
Jeff, we are out of time. I just want to give one quick plug before we wrap up this week's Inside the Huddle. So the Brit Bowl finals are this weekend. They're at Six Ways Stadium in Worcester on Saturday. And again, these are the Brit Bowl finals. So it's the under-19 final is first. It's my Kent Exiles, Jeff, against the East Kilbride Pirates. And then that kicks off at 12 noon at 4 p.m., stop me if you've heard this one before. The main event, the big final, is the London Warriors against the London Blitz. Admission is £5 for adults, £2 for concessions, and under 16s can enter free. So it should be a good day there, Jeff. And it's I know you always take pleasure in seeing how these players play for the love of the game over here in the UK.
It's awesome, and I think that, you know, fans, football fans, you know, if you're an NFL fan, if you've never seen a Brit Bowl, it's worth going to see. And, you know, the kids play extremely hard. It means an awful lot to them to be national champions. And, you know, to get out and support amateur football, I think, is a great thing. And it's interesting how much the game has grown in the UK, but not only grown in terms of viewership and listenership, but how much the players have advanced, the coaching. We had a coach here this past week, Norman Bradford from the Hertz Cheetahs, came and spent 4 days with us and, you know, was on the practice field, went to the game, was on the sideline at the game, was in our meetings. Was all, you know, I think that the coaching's improved, the playing's improved, and there's, you know, it's a great opportunity for fans to go out and see, you know, support amateur football in the UK.
Absolutely. That's at Six Ways Stadium in Worcester on Saturday from 12 noon. Two great games there. I'm completely unbiased, but go Kent Exiles. Jeff, until next until next week, say goodbye to the good folks.
Aloha.